good evening and happy Pride, everyone. It's Pride weekend here in the Bay Area, and I hope you've been out enjoying all of it. Welcome to Outbeat Now. I'm Greg Moralia, here with my co-host Jeff Basham, to bring you a very special show tonight all about the history of Pride and the rapidly evolving LGBT civil rights movement we're all watching unfold before us today. We're grateful to documentarian and filmmaker Christopher Hines, who is sharing with us tonight Legalize Gay, a documentary that he produced that premiered in May of 2012. And you'll hear from some of those gay rights activists and straight allies who are speaking out right now in our fight for equality. But first, let's start with a look back at where it all began and at some of the major events that have shaped who we are today.
We can debate what is an illness or whether it is an illness or not. I happen to subscribe to the belief that it is a tragic illness.
The night of the Stonewall riots came along, just everything came together at that one moment.
They decided, you know, we've had enough of this kind of thing. We're going to fight back.
We got together because we weren't going to put up with being pushed around.
That night was just like any other, until it wasn't. The police raided the Stonewall just like the many times before, but this time, instead of business as usual, they walked in on a united community filled with rage. Rage for the way they had been treated, persecuted, and disrespected. The people had had enough, and they were done. The cops were not prepared. We all know what happened that night and the days following as the so-called Stonewall Rebellion continued. It was certainly the start of something, but I don't think anyone would have predicted where we would be in 40 years if you had questioned them then. The next year, on June 28, 1970, just one short year after the historic raid in New York, the first celebration of LGBT rights was called a gay-in, after a 30-person, mainly hair fairy, march. That's what transgender people were called back then, down the then gay ghetto, Pult Street in San Francisco. Several hundred people attended the gay-in at Speedway Meadows in Golden Gate Park. The theme that year was Freedom Day Revolution. The same day, the first official gay pride parade took place in New York City, where over 2,000 people marched. In 1971, there was no official pride celebration in San Francisco, but the Age of Aquarius parade on a Sunday in August marched down Folsom Street in what was called the Gay Pride Parade of that year. In 1972, the Christopher Street West Parade and Festival was the first year that the event started to resemble the San Francisco Pride celebration that we are all familiar with today, with a festival at Civic Center after the parade. The name was clearly a nod to New York City and the street that the Stonewall Inn is located on. That year, the attendance soared to approximately 54,000. 1973 started a new name for the LGBT event, which would stay for the next 8 years, Gay Freedom Day. The attendance dropped by about 20% as the festival moved back to Golden Gate Park. A celebration of the gay experience was the theme. 1973 was also the year that the American Psychiatric Association removed homosexuality from its manual of mental disorders. The next 2 years, the Gay Freedom by 1976 and the Join Us, the More Visible We Are, the Stronger We Become festivals returned to the Civic Center, and the attendance grew to an astounding 82,000 in 1975. In 1976, the United for Freedom, Diversity is Our Strength celebration took place on a particularly warm day, with the high temperature being 94 degrees in San Francisco. The festival was again held at Golden Gate Park. A lot of nudity ensued. Not surprising, but the festival was filmed by the agents of Etz Miss America Anita Bryant for her anti-gay campaign. The attendance increased again to upwards of 120,000.
The homosexuals.
Most Americans are repelled by the mere notion of homosexuality.
Is in fact a mental illness.
Two out of three Americans look upon homosexuals with disgust, discomfort, or fear. One out of ten says hatred.
One never knows when the homosexual is about.
This involves showing the gay man pictures of nude males and shocking him with a strong electric current. He will be unable to get sexually aroused.
They are taught that no man is born homosexual, that it is not genetic in origin, not the result of a hormone imbalance. Rather, they are told that sexual behavior is learned behavior. The average homosexual, if there be such, is promiscuous. He is not interested in nor capable of a lasting relationship like that of a heterosexual marriage.
And if we catch you with a homosexual, your parents are going to know about it first, and you will be caught, because this is one thing you cannot get away with. This is one thing that if you don't get caught by us, you'll be caught by yourself, and the rest of your life will be a living hell.
In 1977, the parade and celebration themed Gay Frontiers, Past, Present, and Future, changed to today's well-known route from Spear Street, down Market, to City Hall. The attendance more than doubled from the prior year to approximately 250,000. It was in 1977 also that Harvey Milk became the third out American elected to public office. 1978's celebration, called Come Out With Joy, Speak for Justice, saw much more excitement as Milk was growing to power as an inspirational gay icon, only to be assassinated along with San Francisco Mayor George Moscone in City Hall, just under 5 months later.
In the total confusion after the shooting, the president of the Board of Supervisors, Dianne Feinstein, spoke.
Both Mayor Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk have been shot and killed.
In the aftermath of Milk's assassination, the 1979 theme was Our Time Has Come. The attendance remained in the 200,000 range. 1979 also marked the 10-year anniversary since the Stonewall Inn riots. Of special significance, the first rainbow flag with eight colored stripes was raised during the parade in 1978 by Gilbert Baker.
In 1978, Gilbert Baker created the universally recognized rainbow flag, a symbol that has become a rallying tool and a declaration of pride for our community.
All human beings need symbols. All human beings use symbols. And we need a symbol the way other countries, movements, peoples need a symbol to identify us, to show solidarity with each other, and to proclaim our presence.
The rainbow flag is a fresh, new, freestanding, independent vision that has its own special power. There's a star.
Whenever there was a march, they needed a banner. They called Gilbert because he sewed.
I lived in San Francisco, and in 1978, it was an incredible place to be. It was a time of incredible empowerment and political organizing and community building and artistic expression. Really, up until the rainbow flag, the pink triangle was the dominant symbol that we used. But it came from the Nazis. It was put on us. And, you know, it had a really horrible negative origin about murder and Holocaust.
We were trying to change this symbol of oppression into a symbol of power. But there was still something about it that was fundamentally depressing.
I didn't even think twice about what the flag would be. A rainbow fit us. It is from nature. It connects us to all the colors of sexuality and all the diversity in our community.
This really sprang from the head of an artist and was a creative vision to create a symbol that would be a visceral, powerful way of expressing our community, ourselves as a people, and our desire for equality.
The original flag had 8 colors, you know, the pink for sex, red for life, orange for healing, yellow for sun, green for nature, turquoise for magic, blue for serenity, and purple for the spirit. This was the hippie 1978 meanings for the thing.
Gilbert and Cleve Jones, they went to the parade committee with a proposal that they needed to do some big symbol, and they proposed doing a flag.
We made it at the Gay Community Center in San Francisco. Just an amazing process of, you know, 1,000 yards of cotton that we had to wash several times to get the sizing out, and then natural organic dyes that stain you forever when you're using them, but make the most beautiful, vivid colors. And then the fabric, a very thin cotton that lasted about, you know, a week. But it looked like silk, and, you know, endless hours of ironing and the sewing, of course, you know, on a little machine, stitch, stitch, stitch.
Oh, it was breathtaking. I'll never forget it. It was at United Nations Plaza in San Francisco Civic Center. It was Gay Pride, June 1978.
It went up publicly on a big flagpole, 30 by 60 foot, twice. It was huge.
There was a whole bunch of us, and Gilbert was in charge, and the wind was blowing, and we were struggling and hooking it to the cords that would take it up. And then as we started to pull on the rope, the wind took it, and it just billowed open. And it was so beautiful, so astonishing.
I knew right at that moment, you know, when the flag went up and I was looking into the eyes of people that were around and seeing their reaction, I thought, oh my gosh, it's more than I dreamed.
Hundreds of thousands of people saw these gorgeous flags up there in the sun and the wind and knew immediately that that was our new symbol.
Within 5 minutes, people were saying, make me one. You know, the first one that people were saying, make me one. And really, within a couple of months, I was like, oh my God, I'm making all these flags, and I couldn't keep up. I ran out of pink fabric. I mean, I literally exhausted the entire supply of pink fabric. So I quickly compromised once I went into the flag industry to the 6-color version, as I call it, the commercial version.
When Gilbert chose that symbol for the gay and lesbian movement, it sort of eclipsed, I think, any other uses of the rainbow, and everybody now really, you know, connects that to the gay and lesbian movement.
When I did the mile-long flag in New York City, the event itself was a big celebration, Stonewall 25 in New York.
It made headlines around the world. I think it was the first time that the rainbow flag as a symbol for LGBT rights leapt across oceans to other countries.
I had thought of everything except about what to do with it after it was over. So I literally had teams of people running through it with scissors, chunking it, handing off pieces to people. You know, somebody from London was a friend. Here, take this to London. Here, take this to, you know, Hong Kong.
The very next year, pieces of that flag were marched in Cuba, in China, all over Europe, South America.
Get a lot of email stories from around the country and around the world about I put a rainbow flag up on my house and it got vandalized, or, you know, I wore a rainbow flag t-shirt to school and they sent me home, or, you know, I put a rainbow flag sticker on my car and the windshield got broken. The people that have the courage to do that, the people that stand up, they're moving it forward. So even though there are hate people out there, they know what they're hating.
It has become a force in the world that is, I think, unexpected, I imagine, for Gilbert, and moving to all of us.
You can go anywhere in the world and you will find the rainbow flag and people will know what it means. And we owe that to Gilbert Baker.
Together, we're changing our world, our planet, from a place of hate and violence and war to a place of love and diversity and acceptance. And that is why we're here. I mean, that's the big long rainbow from before me to well after me.
In 1980, the parade was called Liberty and Justice for All. The attendance continued to increase. This was the last year the day was called Gay Freedom Day. 1981 marked a name change for the day, now known as the International Lesbian and Gay Freedom Day Parade. The theme was Frontline of Freedom, and the attendance again reached 250,000, returning to the same attendance as 4 years prior. June 5th, just weeks before the event that year, was the day of the first reported AIDS cases in Los Angeles, then known as the 4-H disease, Haitians, homosexuals, hemophiliacs, and heroin users. It would be more than a year before the Centers for Disease Control would clearly and correctly define the virus and give it the name AIDS. The next 2 years, the attendance fell again to late 1970s numbers of approximately 200,000, until a surge in attendance in 1984. The Unity and More in 84 celebration set a new record, 300,000 attendees. 1985's Honor Our Past, Secure Our Future-themed celebration grew again, where attendance was estimated at 350,000. In 1986, the festival was called Forward Together, No Turning Back. In doing research for this segment, I found interesting information regarding 1986. The San Francisco Chronicle's front page story about Pride only said that more than 100,000 people attended. And while that number would indicate a sharp decline in the attendance from the years prior, 400,000 or even more people in attendance still make that a true statement of fact. Also uncovered were controversies around a couple of things in 1986. Autumn Courtney served as the first openly bisexual chairperson of the parade committee, and the two female parade marshals were heterosexual. Although these facts stirred up discussion and debate, there was no reason reported that would lead me to believe that they affected parade attendance at all. In 1988, the theme was Rightfully Proud, and 1989 marked 20 years since the Stonewall Inn riots. The theme acknowledged the milestone, Stonewall 20, A Generation of Pride. The next several years were successful events. The Future is Ours, Hand in Hand Together, A Simple Matter of Justice, Year of the Queer, and 1994's San Francisco to Stonewall Pride and Protest rounded out the final years of the International Lesbian and Gay Freedom Day Parade. 1994 was also the year that the American Medical Association determined that homosexuality was not an illness. And the same year, Canada granted refugee status to all homosexuals who feared their well-being in their native countries.
You with the sad eyes, don't be discouraged, don't worry, realize it's hard to take courage in a world full of people. You can lose sight of it all in the darkness, who inside you make you feel so small. But I see your true colors shining through.
Matt Shepard, the gay college student savagely beaten last week in Wyoming, died this morning.
Mayor Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk have been shot and killed.
How many more gay people does God have to create before we ask ourselves whether or not God actually wants them around?
I'm gay.
Yeah, I'm gay.
Spring. Will Phillips is refusing to pledge allegiance to the flag in his fifth grade classroom until there really is liberty and justice for all.
There is a push underway to lift the ban that prohibits gay men from donating blood.
Gay men have not been allowed to donate blood since 1985 because of a fear of HIV. It's a policy that some say is way outdated and unnecessary.
Homosexual behavior is harmful not only to society, but more importantly to the individuals who engage in that behavior.
Homosexuals and are not to be allowed to be registered as leaders or members of the Boy Scouts of America.
How can we, as people who make the laws, say to one small group of our fellow citizens, you know, there's something about you that some people don't like, so you are not eligible for work. You can be fired. You can't get a promotion.
I hardly think that bullying is a real issue in schools.
I want you to meet a little boy named Asher Brown. He lived in Texas. He was 13 years old. And I say was in the past because he shot himself in the head last Thursday.
Billy Lucas of Greensburg, Indiana, was just 15 years old when bullying pushed him over the edge.
Hi, this is Jamie from Buffalo, New York. I just want to tell you that it does get better.
14-year-old Jamie Rottemeyer took his life Sunday.
Let's do this one for Jamie.
When government starts to tell us who can love and what is good love, I do have a problem with that. I do.
Today I'm announcing my support for a law that gives our same-sex couples in our state the right to receive a marriage license in Washington, the same right given to our heterosexual couples.
I believe that a marriage should be between a man and a woman. No offense to anybody out there, but that's how I was raised, and that's how I think that it should be between a man and a woman.
It was the most controversial state issue on the ballot. You know I'm talking about Proposition Number 8. There are still a few votes to be counted, but it looks like the measure has passed.
If you're for equal rights, why would you get married right now? It's like joining a country club that doesn't allow blacks or Jews. There's no difference.
An open statement by a service member that he or she is a homosexual will create a rebuttable presumption that he or she intends to engage in prohibited conduct.
I am an infantry platoon leader in the New York Army National Guard, and by saying three words to you today, I am gay, those three words are a violation of Title 10 of the U.S. Code.
Lieutenant Dan Choi has been fired from the U.S. military.
Should gay couples have the right to adopt in Virginia?
Florida Governor Charlie Crist has ordered the state to stop enforcing a ban on adoption by gay and lesbian parents.
California's ban on same-sex marriage was overturned by a federal judge in San Francisco.
On February 12th, an openly gay 15-year-old boy named Larry, who is an eighth grader in Oxnard, California, was murdered by a fellow eighth grader named Brandon. Larry was killed because he was gay.
One of the most obnoxious and offensive vestiges of our criminal justice system from another era is the gay panic defense. The idea that if a gay person makes a pass at you and you don't like it, you can fly into a rage, shoot and kill that person, and that's some kind of a defense.
We are not a nation that says, don't ask, don't tell. We are a nation that says, out of many, we are one.
With something brand new in America Today. It is day one.
The long controversial don't ask, don't tell policy expired at midnight.
Some say domestic partnerships are the same as marriage. That's a version of the discriminatory, separate but equal argument of the past.
You are telling Iowans that some among you are second-class citizens who do not have the right to marry the person you love.
You can love that person, but you can't marry them. That's wrong.
It's separate but equal. I can be a second-class citizen.
I cannot legally come up with an argument against same-sex marriage.
To all of the gay and lesbian kids out there tonight who have been told that they are less than by their churches, or by the government, or by their families, you are beautiful, wonderful creatures of value.
Our mission is to reach out and teach people to love and not to hate.
When the message out there is so horrible that to be gay, you can get killed for it, we need to change the message.
Things will get easier.
It gets better.
The sexual orientation of my parents has had zero effect on
the back of Erica. I have a dream.
We too have a dream.
Are you listening?
This is done.
Bless God and bless the gays.
Ayes 33, nays 29.
down, keep it going.
The history is back.
Love! Love! Love!
And you, and you, and you, gotta give them hope.
Every American citizen has the right
to be on the right side of history.
Thank you very much.
Larry was not a second-class citizen. I am not a second-class citizen. It is okay if you're gay.
Listening to a special Pride Night edition of Outbeat Now on KRCB-FM, Santa Rosa. Christopher Hines is an American documentary film director and journalist. He's most known for his documentaries on gay culture, including The Butch Factor and The Adonis Factor. Hines started as a journalist here in the Bay Area, working for the Oakland Tribune and San Francisco Chronicle. In May of 2012, he premiered Legalize Gay, a documentary featuring stories of several straight allies who are speaking out today in support of LGBT equality.
In just a few weeks' time, seven gay teenagers killed themselves after many were harassed and bullied for being gay.
Take it slow. Seems
becoming a terrible trend across the country.
The tragedy sparked a national outcry.
Some say it's an epidemic.
And an unprecedented show of public support for LGBT youth. Politicians, celebrities, athletes, and people from across the country joined to express their concern in the It Gets Better viral video campaign. The outpouring of support after the gay teen suicides marked an historic turning point in the campaign for LGBT equality. Joe Solmanese is president of the Human Rights Campaign, the nation's largest LGBT advocacy organization.
To be homophobic or to say something homophobic in this country now is tantamount to saying something racist. On any matter of LGBT equality, polling of the American people is moving in our direction. Straight people see more and more LGBT people around them living their lives out and open. As a result, I think get a better sense of the inequities and the disparities that we face as LGBT people and feel compelled to say something about it.
British rugby player Ben Cohen is a leading straight ally in the struggle for LGBT equality.
We're getting behind them, and that's where... It's
really... He's definitely a favorite of gay men, appearing in many gay magazines.
I hate bullying. I hate people to get treated unfairly, and always have.
I related it to my personal tragedy in my life when my dad got murdered.
Ben's father died from injuries after he was attacked while coming to the defense of someone being bullied and beaten outside a nightclub.
Jumped him from behind and one grabbed him around the neck. I know what violence can lead to. I know what looking at you, someone you love lying in an intensive care unit or the tubes to try and keep them alive. It's bloody tragic, and to someone could impulsively just ruin someone's life like that. That's why I hate bullying. To do something maybe off a whim, say something, do something physically, mentally, can leave everlasting damage, emotionally or physically, for the rest of their lives. And to someone to live with that is not right.
Ben just had a strong kind of personal feeling for this with his dad, and obviously being a father now, well, your values change when you have children because you want to protect them and you don't want anyone to bully them. He's just got really strong views about it, and we received all these emails from people that were victims of, and it was just really sad.
They did the unthinkable of living rough, running away, and killing themselves. I'm in a privileged position to do something here.
Ben joined forces with Patrick Davis, whose company has created branding strategies for many major U.S. companies to create something very unique in the campaign for LGBT equality.
Ben is the first straight athlete to dedicate his philanthropic efforts to LGBT people, and this is the first social commerce brand dedicated to LGBT causes. So when they purchase items that are branded with Stand Up, they're actually contributing to the cost.
It's similar to the Red campaign launched by U2 frontman Bono to combat AIDS around the world. Ben's Stand Up Foundation is also a reflection of another cultural shift going on in support of LGBT equality in the marketplace.
Brands and corporations have enormous power to say, we want this type of social change. The marketplace is well ahead of where legislation is in this country, and it gives us great optimism.
There's no better example of the LGBT community's growing economic clout than when one of the country's most prestigious law firms, King & Spalding, which represents many major U.S. companies, dropped a case defending DOMA, a federal law banning same-sex marriage.
We made very clear to most of the major law firms in this country that we thought this was an issue that was indefensible. The firm ultimately saw they wanted to be on the right side of history.
The HRC does an annual rating of LGBT equality in the workplace among Fortune 500 companies. In 2001, only 13 companies passed.
This year, over 350 companies received a perfect 100% score on that rating.
HRC found another important corporate ally in American Apparel, the clothing manufacturer which came up with Legalize Gay, the key slogan in the HRC's lobbying campaign. American Apparel said in a statement, "We've since given away 100,000 Legalize Gay t-shirts, run protest advertisements nationwide. We are proud to take this stand." Ben hopes to tap into this progressive current running through corporate America with his Stand Up Foundation.
It's about earning a lot of money for a great cause, having the power to make a change. People realise in that movable middle, he's gay, but he's a real nice person.
Do you like that?
Yeah, I love America.
That's the snowball effect that has. Look for people who they are, you know. I don't say, well, are you straight or gay? How am I going to treat you today? It's not that way. It's face value for me, you know. It's like, oh, mate, how you doing? Hope you're well. Yeah, Ben or whatever, you know. And that's how it should be, shouldn't it?
Ben took this spirit of acceptance on a tour of the United States, doing fundraisers and visiting gay rugby clubs at a number of cities across the country, including the Bucks in Atlanta, Georgia.
Go forward. Rugby's all about basics.
Just a really, really nice, genuine individual.
He's definitely easy on the eyes, but the fact that the person behind that, the person inside that, is much, much, much greater.
Put two to a ruck.
The fact that he's straight, he's a very successful professional athlete, and he's showing support for the LGBT community. It's a much stronger voice.
Is that what I mean?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Trying to bring the two groups together, inclusiveness is, I think, really great.
If we're going to progress as a community, we need to have folks from the straight community to help us out, to help translate who we are to everybody else and just let everybody else know we're just like you guys, you know, exactly. We're just like the straight guys. We just have different preferences, and we shouldn't be treated any differently because of that.
Former college football star Brian Sims, who met up with Ben in Atlanta, knows the importance of bridging that gap between the gay and straight worlds. Brian was the first openly gay college football captain.
I may have spoken to more college athletes in the last year than anybody in the country. I can walk into a room of people who don't think that they know or like gay people, who think that they can only relate to machismo or testosterone, and I get a 5-minute pass with that room, and I can talk to them in a way that they're not gonna let other people talk to them. I am finding that I have an ability to reach a certain audience that didn't want to be reached and didn't think it could be reached, and yet is very perceptive.
Brian said he had a pretty easy coming out experience when he was playing for the Bloomsburg University football team in northeastern Pennsylvania.
My quarterback stops me just dead in my tracks, and he says, "Yo, Sims, are you gay?" And I said, "Yeah, man, thanks for asking." We sat there for a minute, and he goes, "All right, cool." My teammates got to not only play alongside me, see my dedication, see my commitment to not just me being a better player, but our team playing better, to my teammates being better, but they also got to hear from me the sense of a social consciousness that I have. And I think they looked at this as an opportunity to reflect that back on me a bit. If you do nothing else in your life except for come out, you do more to support LGBT issues and the agendas among your straight peers and counterparts than anything else that you can do.
Brian lives in Philadelphia and is working to promote LGBT equality on many fronts. He's a lawyer and was president of Equality Pennsylvania, along with being on the boards of a number of state and national LGBT advocacy organizations.
You be strategic. All of the things that I do now professionally relate either to gay civil rights, gay candidates, or LGBT issues. So I lovingly say that I am professionally gay. It's a sense of justice. It's a certain sense of fairness. My LGBT experience has been very positive. I don't come from a background of negativity and a background of discrimination. And so I know what the experience looks like when it goes well. I know how close we are to that. Came to Philly to get married from
here,
Jersey?
I'm doing my residency at Jefferson.
Oh, nice. So. Congratulations.
Brian has bigger political ambitions. He hopes to be the first openly gay member of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives.
For me, in doing gay rights advocacy, one of the things that I know is that there's no substitute for having somebody actually in the legislative body who is out and understands what I'm talking about. So instead of just lobbying a straight person to pass LGBT rights legislation, I know how important it is to have that person in the House, and I think I can be that person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
25-year-old Hudson Taylor is on his own campaign for LGBT equality.
PDX, how you doing?
Hudson was an All-American Championship wrestler in college. Hudson made national headlines when he wore the HRC equality symbol on his wrestling headgear.
I'm happy to say that I am an out loud ally of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community. Woo! But the truth is that no minority group has ever gained their full rights without the help of the majority. I challenge you to do more, to speak louder.
Hudson has since become a leading spokesman for the HRC, attending events around the country.
It's the right thing to do. This is not a gay issue or a straight issue. This is a human issue.
He pretty much said it was something he felt pretty much in his heart, and I think that's amazing. You know, the younger generation stepping up and realizing it's not about basically choice, it's who we are, and it's a fundamental right.
Those are the gayest issues in the world!
Portland, Oregon, Hudson marched in his first Pride parade.
Every time I hear him speak or see him out there working on our behalf, I'm genuinely moved by him.
For a long time, I was pretty complacent. I've heard homophobic language used in locker room after locker room. It's a tool to assert one's heterosexism. Athletes in particular have grown up with a pretty defined border as to what is and is not masculine.
Take it easy, plenty of time, Hudson.
Those masculine gender scripts promote homophobic language and make it very hard for a student to explore other areas and other interests.
In college, I was a theater major.
I found that theater was a great place for me to balance my aesthetic and creative self with my athletic self. Once a month, I had a classmate and a friend who would come out. We'd have this makeshift celebration. Everybody would come together, high fives, and that was a really new experience for me.
Then going back to the wrestling room, hearing the homophobic and derogatory language really affected me in a major way. To not do something about it then was almost not even acceptable.
Hudson decided to expand his efforts beyond the locker room and establish the Athlete Ally campaign to end LGBT discrimination in sports. Athlete Ally held its first fundraiser at the Oceanside Resort of Asbury Park, New Jersey.
One of the major initiatives that I've been doing with Athlete Ally is the Athlete Ally Pledge. So we have about 4,000 signatures now of people from all across the country, of athletic directors, athletes, taking a pledge to make a difference in sports. I'm gonna create a database so that if you're a closeted athlete somewhere in the country, you could go on Athlete Ally and see where the safe spaces are in sports.
Hudson was joined at his fundraiser by another important ally in the campaign for LGBT equality. Miss New York Claire Buffy became the first contestant in Miss America's 90-year history to make gay and lesbian rights her platform in the competition.
Next is Claire Buffy, Miss New York. Hi, Claire.
No one deserves to be treated as a second-class citizen.
We're just trying to really open the doors for more straight allies to come out and be comfortable and confident in their alliance. Because sometimes it can be a little bit of a scary thing. When someone in your family comes out, especially my older sister, who is my role model in many ways, and now my inspiration for this platform, when she came out, obviously it really brought this issue home. I knew that I loved her so much and that I accepted her for everything about her, but I was a realist and I knew how society could perhaps treat her. I was scared. Platform that I chose was equality. I knew that LGBT equality was what I was most passionate about.
Yeah, it's good to see you again.
For a person in Miss America, this iconic American tradition that is historically conservative, to really break that mold with access to an entire generation of youth, you have a bit of influence over, and to bring this new topic in was really important.
Me coming from a family with three siblings that aren't 100% supporting, it's actually really inspiring because I consider her as like my big sister.
This isn't an issue just about gay rights. This is fundamentally and at the foundation an issue about respect and dignity and equality and fairness, all things that people deserve as human beings, and that's a common thread that unites all of us.
Claire also threw her support behind the campaign for same-sex marriage in New York.
I believe that everyone, including my sister Sarah, deserves the right to marry the one they love.
In another state more than 1,000 miles away, Zach Walls was demanding fairness and equality for the marriage of his parents. Zach captured the attention of a nation when he spoke in the Iowa House of Representatives against a proposed constitutional amendment outlawing same-sex marriage.
I'm a sixth generation Iowan and an engineering student at the University of Iowa, and I was raised by two women.
Iowa Republicans were trying to overturn a state Supreme Court ruling allowing same-sex marriage.
There were politicians who, you know, looked at us and said, you shouldn't exist. You know, your family shouldn't exist. Your family is inconsistent with America. Your family is inconsistent with religion.
And our family really isn't so different from any other Iowa family. When I'm home, we go to church together, we eat dinner, we go on vacations. But, you know, we have our hard times too, we get in fights. Actually, my mom, Terry, was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 2000. It is a devastating disease that put her in a wheelchair, so we've had our struggles.
Without a supportive family, as I became progressively more severely disabled, the future would have been absolutely terrifying.
The sense of family comes from the commitment we make to each other, to work through the hard times so we can enjoy the good ones. It comes from the love that binds us. That's what makes a family. So what you're voting here isn't to change us. It's not to change our families. It's to change how the law views us, how the law treats us. You are voting for the first time in the history of our state to codify discrimination into our Constitution.
You have to protect your family. That's what it felt like I was doing. Now, the fact of the matter is that there were people who wanted my family not to exist. And I think that's a pretty motivating factor for just about anybody.
Troy Price is executive director of the LGBT rights group, One Iowa.
You could see it in the audience, you could see it amongst the people, you could hear it in the people that came out after the public hearing, that his story really helped set the tone for the evening. It was just amazing. It helps make the family argument. It helps show that we're not talking about some nefarious agenda that the far right tries to say. What we're talking about are loving, committed LGBT families. Zach provided a face for that.
Because the sexual orientation of my parents has had zero effect on the content of my character. Thank you very much.
20 years ago, I did not think I'd ever get to have a child. Now it turns out I have a son who is affecting the lives of millions. Wonderful things can happen. They're happening because we have a very effective, loving family that hangs in there. And it's that being out there, helping with your community, helping in your church, helping in your kids' activities, that lets everyone else see that you are just another pillar of the community.
The experience of Zach's moms won't be highlighted in many sex education classes in the United States. Most of them only teach marriage between a man and a woman. 15-year-old Danny Sparks was determined to change that. Danny took on his school district over an issue that not only affected LGBT students, but straight ones as well. Danny was frustrated by the lack of education in his sex education classes.
At first, I didn't think twice about what they were teaching. I accepted, you know, the fact that it was abstinence only until marriage messaging, which it really focused on heterosexual couples.
The school district of Parma City, Ohio, a suburb of Cleveland, had turned over its sex education classes to a private group called Operation Keepsake, which promoted abstinence only until marriage. The front page of the group's website warns of teen dating violence.
As a gay student, I can't get married in the state of Ohio. You know, it's constitutionally banned. I felt removed from their message. That just really pushed me over the edge.
Danny drew on straight allies in his class to overturn the Operation Keepsake sex education curriculum.
They weren't giving us adequate information. It was preaching to us, don't have sex. They had these gender stereotypes. Women were supposed to be people that had to be protected, and like men were like the protectorates, and like I was supposed to be like some princess that needed somebody to save me or something. You know, I just thought that was absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely nobody took this program seriously. You know, we were making jokes and like nobody was paying attention.
I wrote a letter to my high school administration expressing the message that what they were teaching was inadequate for the needs of their students. I got little to no response. So we decided that the only way that we could get them to answer to us was by speaking at a board meeting.
It is my hope that we can work together, sooner rather than later, to better understand the gravity of this issue relative to our student and community needs. This recommendation cannot be the end, but rather the beginning from which this district can begin teaching the truth and nothing but the truth.
Thank you, Mr. Sparks.
Danny turned to the AIDS Task Force of Greater Cleveland for support. One of the group's primary goals is to provide comprehensive safe sex education. However, Danny's efforts also sparked a fierce response from conservative groups.
Northeast Ohio Value Voters, which is a small conservative organization, had taken photos from his Facebook page, put them on their own website, calling him a gay atheist.
We don't seem to be pushing back. We seem to be allowing our society to get more and more liberalized.
I didn't feel scared. This was a fringe group. They were there. There was nothing we could do about it. We just had to move on.
Through the work of Danny and his peers, they were able to get Operation Keepsake disinvited from the school district. And so that was a huge victory.
The school district also invited Danny to be part of a task force to examine the district's sex education curriculum and make recommendations.
As a focus group, we did come up with some changes. There will be no longer any supplemental instruction, meaning outside people coming in. It is strictly the teacher, and changing some verbiage from partner to, you know, instead of saying marriage every single time, we can say partner.
However, the task force recommended that the district stick with an abstinence-based curriculum.
It is being looked at, it's not being ignored, and then the folks at this table will make an informed and educated decision. So again, thank you for coming in. And again, Danny, I appreciate the way you approach this.
At the last task force meeting, a school nurse told me that even though we hadn't really achieved what I wanted to achieve, that this was huge for the Parma area, and that, you know, this was bringing about a conversation that ordinarily would not have been started.
He's very courageous, and he's very well-spoken in what he does. And
I think it's very brave that he's doing what he's doing. I know that I wouldn't have the guts, but I know that somebody has to in order for change to occur, and he's one of those people who's really going to, I think, make change in the world.
Someone who has become a role model for not just the LGBT community, but the entire nation, is 21-year-old Danny Hernandez.
Welcome to the mound for an all-star ceremonial first pitch, Daniel Hernandez.
Hernandez is credited with helping to save the life of U.S. Congresswoman Gabby Giffords during a shooting attack in Arizona.
We are grateful to Daniel Hernandez, a volunteer in Gabby's office. And Daniel, I'm sorry, you may deny it, but we've decided you are a hero because you ran through the chaos to minister to your boss and tended to her wounds and helped keep her alive.
if I was going to get shot, it was going to happen whether I was cowering behind a pillar or whether it was helping someone else. So my decision was, I need to get to those who have been injured. I've had people now who have found out that I'm a member of the LGBT community who were so averse to anyone in that community now coming up and saying, you know what? I've spent time with you, I really respect you, and you're making me change some of the perceptions that I had. That's how we really gain acceptance.
Danny also spoke at Camp Pride.
You can't expect anyone to respect you unless you respect yourself. And I think that's something that's really challenging for a lot of us because we are so used to being beat down, we are so used to being told you're another, you are not good enough. So sometimes we just have to rely on ourselves. That's a challenge.
It's become very important for me to make sure that I'm talking to particularly young people, whether it's Latinos or LGBT groups, to really try and provide what I didn't have when I was growing up. There wasn't too many people who were visible of either community.
If we get involved and we talk to those who seek to represent us and we show them what our values are, because when we don't show up and we're invisible, that's when we run into problems, and that's when you see prosecution of certain groups.
Young people are the whole solution for us. Young people are the key to really closing the deal on our community's full equality. They stand poised to really play the most significant role.
This is an incredibly unique window of opportunity. We're getting great momentum on the state level, the federal level, with the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Public opinion's at our side. This is a result of years and years of work and activism. If there's ever a time to stand up for your rights and to stand up for your family, now is the time.
From the Victory Fund to local organizations, this new generation of LGBT activists can count on an ever-expanding network of support groups in their drive for equality.
I really believe that if it weren't for these community organizations, it would have been so easy for Danny to give up and feel defeated.
It was so helpful for me. I had other young people that were gay and that were, you know, being themselves. When young people speak up, it makes the possibility of change even greater.
Today's youth are also masters of social media, an invaluable tool in the campaign for equal rights.
Social media is extremely important in the movement. If it's not promoting the movement, it's putting people in contact with resources.
Knowing for certain that you are not the only one gives you a sense of empowerment to stand up.
Zach Walls learned firsthand the importance of the internet in addressing LGBT issues, which are often overlooked by mainstream media.
At that hearing, there were old like TV cameras from like the local TV stations, and the coverage the next day, I was like a small blurb. But then the internet took the 3-minute footage and blasted it out all over Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and then all of a sudden, I wasn't just a paragraph, it became a story in and of itself.
There is 100% a generational shift going on. Increasingly, kids are growing up in diverse areas. As a result, kids in my generation and younger are really realizing that the differences between us are only the differences we impose. I believe that I am responsible for whatever history I'm a part of.
I'm not advocating for you to accept gay and lesbian students. I'm advocating for you to accept anyone who's different from you and give them the respect that they deserve.
An 18-year-old in Alabama is more likely to support gay marriage than a 65-year-old in Massachusetts. And if that doesn't really sum up the generational divide, the task before us is to convince the people who don't really have an opinion that they should, because civil rights are civil rights, and if one minority's civil rights are under attack, you know, you have to start wondering who's next.
This culture and our society is going to go through a drastic shift because at an earlier age, the youth is exposed to so much. We're open to a lot more. We just have a wider perspective of what is right and what is wrong.
LGBT!
And we're willing to fight for it. We have the energy to. And honestly, we don't feel like we have anything to lose. The only thing that I feel like I have to lose is my soul and my dignity.
We have come a long way thanks to the sacrifices and hard work of the many who have come before us, as well as to those who are on the front lines fighting for equality today.
I have to tell you, as I said, I've been going through an evolution on this issue. I've always been adamant that gay and lesbian Americans should be treated fairly and equally. And that's why, in addition to everything we've done in this administration, rolling back Don't Ask, Don't Tell, so that outstanding Americans can serve our country, whether it's no longer defending the Defense Against Marriage Act, which tried to federalize what has historically been state law. I've stood on the side of broader equality for the LGBT community. And I had hesitated on gay marriage, in part because I thought civil unions would be sufficient, that was something that would give people hospital visitation rights and other elements that we take for granted. And I was sensitive to the fact that for a lot of people, the word marriage was something that evokes very powerful traditions, religious beliefs, and so forth. But I have to tell you that over the course of several years, as I talk to friends and family and neighbors, when I think about members of my own staff who are in incredibly committed monogamous relationships, same-sex relationships, who are raising kids together, when I think about those soldiers or airmen or Marines or sailors who are out there fighting on my behalf and yet feel constrained, even now that Don't Ask, Don't Tell is gone, because they're not able to commit themselves in a marriage. At a certain point, I've just concluded that for me personally, it is important for me to go ahead and affirm that I think same-sex couples should be able to get married.
We do indeed have much to be proud of, and I hope that you've found some reasons this month to feel pride. You don't have to wait for this annual event, though. Jeff and I challenge you to find a reason every day to be proud of who you are. Our thanks tonight to Christopher Hines for sharing his documentary with us. Jeff and I will be back next month on the fourth Sunday with another edition of Outbeat Now. And be sure to tune in next Sunday night at 8 p.m. for Outbeat Radio. That's only here on KRCB-FM Santa Rosa. In the meantime, have a great week, and thanks for spending your night with us. So many.